Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks. Tasneem Zahra Hussain is a theoretical physicist who has a love affair with science. And she asks what happens when our understanding of the universe is challenged. In those grand and terrifying moments, what do scientists think and how do they feel? So she's written a novel that takes you back in time to explore some of the most important scientific discoveries and theories that have shaped our understanding of the world and universe. Relativity, quantum mechanics, string theory. Her fictional characters are science enthusiasts who witness and illuminate these new theories. A young English boy who's enthralled by Newton's work. An American schoolteacher who's inspired by Einstein and who waits at Battery Park to welcome him to New York. It's not science fiction, but it's science in fiction. Tasneem Zahra Hussain is a writer and theoretical physicist. In fact, she was Pakistan's first female string theorist, and she lives in Cambridge now. Her new novel is called Only the Longest Threads, and she's with us now. Welcome to Radio Boston. It's a great pleasure to have you.
Thank you so much. I'm so glad to be here.
So tell us, first question, why did you want to write this book of fiction?
So what you said about the love affair with physics, that is absolutely true for me. That's how I feel about my relationship with physics. It's something that's intensely emotional. And I think that's true for all professional physicists. We all love what we do. And I just feel that that doesn't always make it across to the public. So I don't know why it is, but over the years, for a combination of reasons, science is always portrayed as something that's very objective. It's, you know, it's harsh, it's done, it's decided, it's written in stone. And that's so not true. And what I wanted to do was to write something that reflected the facts, but also the feelings of science. I wanted it to be the emotions and, you know, what it feels like for us.
You've done it really well.
Thank you.
You talk about this love affair for science, and it sounds like this is a real effort to express that love affair.
It really was. It was a labor of love.
So this book begins with a character named Leo. He's a science writer, and he's come to CERN in Switzerland to cover the Large Hadron Collider and the anticipated discovery of the Higgs boson particle. And there's just a line in here I want to read. He says, "So I should explain, I write about science for a general audience, but a lot of the time I'm not happy with the way the tone comes out. I want it to sound less journalistic and more alive, something engaging that will draw readers in instead of shutting them out, you know?" That sounds like you.
It does. It does. You know how people always ask if there's anything autobiographical in anything you write? And I think there are sort of bits and pieces of me in all of the characters. And that, you know, what Leo said is exactly how I feel.
Right. So Leo is persuaded to write a work of fiction about science, to go back and imagine what it was like when these amazing theories were first born. But before he embarks on this, he says, "Fiction? The thought terrifies me and fascinates me at the same time. I don't do fiction, never have, but maybe that's the problem. All those qualities my writing lacks are precisely what fiction excels in." And I'm just wondering, as a scientist, did you have those? Were you terrified by the idea of fiction?
I was, because I think when I was trying to formulate it in my mind and when I would talk about it to people in and everything, you know, the first reaction would always be, "Oh, it's science fiction."
Yeah.
And I had to sort of clarify that for myself, because it's almost like you're inventing a genre. And, you know, I was a little bit scared of how that would work out and how people would perceive it and how I would do it, because it's not something that I'd seen done before.
Right.
So I was a little terrified, but I knew that I wanted the emotions to come through. And I felt like you just can't do that in nonfiction.
Interesting. So it's not science fiction. I described it in the introduction as science in fiction. But how would you...
You know what? That's exactly what I've been saying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's great.
That's it.
So I'd love it if you could read something. This is
sure.
On page 82. And I just want you to read down through the first paragraph. But the book jumps around a little bit through time and, mm-hmm. and chapter. So this is a character that you introduce. He's a school teacher waiting for the arrival of Albert Einstein in New York, right?
Right. So it's April 3rd, 1921, and he's in New York. And he says, "It finally happened. He arrived yesterday afternoon. The Times headline this morning screams, 'Professor Einstein here explains relativity. Boyd in Science says it is a theory of space and time, but it baffles reporters.' I hardly slept last night, so anxious was I to see the morning paper, to read what people had written about this momental event, to see the photographs and to reassure myself that it was not all just a dream. For among those thousands of spectators in Battery Park when the mayor and other dignitaries brought Einstein ashore on a police tugboat, I was also present.
Hmm. So tell us a little bit more about this character. Who is he?
So he's a school teacher, and when I was writing about the different theories, I wanted to represent, you know, the vast cast of characters that partake in science. It's a very huge effort, and it's this, you know, very big human drama. And the scope of it is so much richer than we normally hear about. I mean, we hear about the people who've made it up to the top. We hear about the Nobel laureates. We hear about, you know, the really famous scientists. And we don't always hear about all these people who love these things very passionately, who love these ideas, but are just everyday people.
Yeah.
And those make up, you know, the vast numbers of people who do science. So this particular person is a school teacher, and he wasn't able to go on to university and pursue his passion. But that doesn't take away from how strongly he feels about it.
I see.
So he doesn't have, you know, a very rigorous scientific background, but he loves these ideas and he's trying to understand them.
It's really one of the nice, it's a lovely character that you've created in this book. Now, the book goes through a bunch of sort of scientific breakthroughs in physics, electromagnetism, quantum mechanics, string theory. It opens with a very recent discovery, the Higgs boson particle, as we mentioned. So how did you attempt to what kind of research did you have to do for this? Because, I mean, obviously your background is science, but there's much more than just science in this book.
So I think that's one of the things that comes from being a scientist. I'm a research geek. I love research. I did a lot more than I think was strictly needed. But what was very important for me was to capture the essence of the time when these discoveries were happening. And I think one of the problems that I feel personally is that each of us, we relive the history of thought in our own lives. I mean, just because someone discovered something 400 years ago, it's still new for me when I see it. But if it's presented to me as something that's already old, I become blasé about it without really considering the options. And I wanted all of these characters to talk about things that were happening that were new at the time, and, you know, for them to convey that excitement. And in order to do that, I had to be very true to the spirit of the times and the surroundings and, you know, get into what it must have felt like for them. So I read a lot of science that was written at the time. I looked at photographs. I went back and, you know, looked at old maps, what things would... I really tried to get into what the atmosphere would have been like so that I could see it from the perspective of someone who was, you know, living there and watching it unfold.
It's an amazing thing to think about, and I gather, you know, in thinking about writing a book like this, that you must have had the idea that these ideas are so spellbinding, they're so amazing, they're so revolutionary, but they were in their time. But perhaps we've sort of let that, I don't know, that excitement about them, right, dull a little bit.
That's exactly it, which is why I felt like we needed to go back to when they're new. Yeah. And if you hear someone go through those things and, you know, if you see them experience it, then some of that hopefully makes its way to you instead of just looking at the facts.
Yeah.
And that's what my hope is, that, you know, those ideas will become alive again and people will really feel them for what they are.
Tell me about the title of the book, because it's not immediately apparent what it means, but I know it's based on a quote that you picked out, "Only the longest threads." What does that refer to?
It is. It's a quote by Richard Feynman, who was a Nobel laureate and is also mentioned in the book. He was one of the people who was responsible for coming up with quantum electrodynamics. And he was also an amazing teacher. He wrote the Feynman Lectures on Physics, which are, you know, pretty standard text for a lot of students. So he said, "Nature uses only the longest threads to weave her tapestry."
Mm-hmm.
So that, and the point was that, you know, the design is sort of repeated. Whatever little piece of nature you look at, there are such long threads that are weaving through that design that even if you look at a little piece, you get a hint of what's going on in the whole tapestry.
Hmm, that's a lovely idea. It's sort of, yeah. So it's almost it creates a sense of sort of cohesiveness.
Exactly. There's a continuity in there, you know, these repeated motifs and whatever you pick up and you look at, it's connected to everything else. So there are all of these things that are, you know, being tied together.
Yeah. The book also picks up on some of the great frustrations that physicists face, and you include a great quote from the late physicist Wolfgang Pauli, who said, "Physics is very muddled again at the moment. It is much too hard for me anyway, and I wish I were a movie comedian or something like that and had never heard anything about physics." Now he's considered one of the great pioneers of quantum physics, and yet he says it's too hard for him.
Which is why I put that in there. That's one of my favorite quotes. And yeah. I also think that's something very important for people to know, I mean, especially people on the outside. I think, again, we portray science as being, you know, all sort of clinical and cleaned up. I mean, we show people the result when it's all done. And if they don't know the process and they don't know how much people suffered, you know, while creating this really beautiful construct, I think that's also very alienating. Because it seems like, you know, oh, well, there's this perfect thing out there and there were these, you know, big geniuses and they understood everything and it must have been so simple for them. And if it's not immediately obvious to me, I must be too dumb to understand it. So there's this distance that, you know, it puts. And I think if you realize that everyone struggled with these ideas, yeah. you know, and there are these very passionate relationships that they had with them, they were tormented. I mean, there was people committed suicide because they were, you know, there's that. It's like it runs the entire range of human emotions. And I think that just makes it more relatable somehow. Yeah. You know, if you're struggling and you realize that all the geniuses throughout time struggled, it somehow makes that okay.
So did you relate to that? Have you struggled with your science?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, I don't know anyone in grad school who hasn't had these moments of, you know, what am I doing with my life? I mean, what am I doing here? This makes no sense. But you go back to it because there's this huge pull. Yeah. But I do think that, you know, it's important to convey that as well to the public, to say what it is hard and it is frustrating. It's just that it's worth it.
You know, it strikes me, Tasneem, that one of the things you've done here is you've made a really sort of beautiful effort to explain what it is that you do and sort of what explains your passion for physics. But you're a theoretical physicist and your specific focus is string theory, which is so difficult to explain when someone comes up to you at a, I don't know, at a dinner party and says, "Oh, nice to meet you. What do you do?"
Yes. It is.
What do you say?
You know what? And I can actually see. So I say I do string theory. And then the question is, what is that? And it literally goes like one of a few ways. I got it down there, like two or three things. There's one reaction where you can just see the subtle shift in someone's expression. They're like, you know, she looked normal enough before we knew this. And they'll just sort of edge away. Or there's this, oh, I hated physics in high school. And, you know, part of me thinks, well, I can't really blame you for that because it's not always that interesting. And then there's this, you know, other question when people are genuinely curious and they're interested and they want to know. And the problem with that is there's no easy way. I mean, I could give a very glib one-sentence answer, but that's not doing the theory justice.
Right.
And one of the problems with that is, you know, when you say that to someone, they naturally enough want to know, well, what is it good for? What do you make? What is it used for? And I have no answers to that right now. I mean, I just don't know what it'll be good for because it's still being constructed. What are we trying to do? We're trying to understand the fundamental building blocks of the universe. What, you know, practical application will that ever lead to? I don't know yet. So it's a very abstract thing. And that's why I wanted to write this book, to show why we deal with abstract ideas. You know, there's no immediate practical application that I know of. I'm happy to spend my life doing this. Why? You know, there has to be some kind of emotional trade-off for me. And I wanted to explain what that is.
Well, the book is Only the Longest Threads. The author is Tasneem Zahra Hussain. Thank you so much for coming in. We really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
And we're going to mention that Tasneem is going to be at the Harvard Coop tonight for the official book launch. She'll also be reading at the Harvard Bookstore on Friday night. A lot more information at radioboston.org. Stay with us. Coming up, the New England Revolution has a shot at the MLS Cup Championship. Will they do it? We'll ask Bill Littlefield. Stay with us. I'm Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.